Bill. I met him in the early spring of 1981 when I was in law school. I'd come to Sioux City once in a while to find things that I didn't think I could probably find in small town South Dakota. There was this spark the minute his dark brown eyes met mine. His smile melted my heart. And he looked good in those tight Jordache jeans that were hot in the 1980s. "You want to have a beer?" I asked. And he told me about the cold taps at Casa del Rey. We talked for hours, just like old friends. Then we spent the night together. It's the first time I'd ever done that, even though I was 24 years old. I waited more than a week after that for him to call. He never did, so I called him. He was living with his sister, and she answered the phone, and I made up this ridiculous story that I was Bill's buddy and I left my gloves in his car. So she sent him out to look, and I thought, damn, he's not even going to get on the phone. But then there he was, and my heart skipped a beat. And he agreed to meet me at the Jockey Club for another beer. I still remember he walked in wearing a striped polo shirt and those same Jordache jeans. Over the next year and a half, we spent every weekend in every Motel 6 and Super 8 from here to Omaha, away from the prying eyes of his family and my classmates. Risky? Yeah, but it was just us, Bill and me. A year later, I graduated, and we moved to Kansas City and had our first apartment together. It was the 1980s. AIDS was an epidemic. The closet was the safest place for us to be. The risk of coming out was just too great. We could lose our families. We could lose the people we loved the most. We could disappoint the people we loved the most. When our families would come to visit, they'd stay in Bill's room. We'd try to hide the smiles when we'd say, "Yeah, Bill will just have to bunk in with Jim tonight." We stopped hiding 15 years later because we wanted to start a family. It's something we'd talked about that first night that we met. My 16-year-old niece was pregnant at the time. She asked us to adopt her baby. Suddenly, we had everything that mattered. We had each other, our families, our home, and now a wonderful baby girl. Everything was perfect. We were happy. The risks had paid off. A few years later, my career took us to Denver. We built a beautiful home in the foothills, and life was good. Well, it was good for me anyway. Bill wanted to do real estate, flips and rentals, but the real estate market in Denver was just too hot for us to finance that. So Bill decided to become a stay-at-home dad. He said that's what he wanted. And he seemed happy, making play dates with our daughter and making friends with the neighbors. But it changed things. I was the provider, and he depended on me. If either of us resented this arrangement, well, I guess we hit it pretty well. In fact, one day I was skiing with a friend, and he said, "You know, Jim, all the straight couples in our cul-de-sac think that you and Bill are the most happy, normal, well-adjusted family in our subdivision." And our family was about to get bigger. Our son came along when a beautiful young friend asked us to adopt her newborn baby. We were among the first in the country to co-adopt. Our kids' birth certificates actually show us both as parents. Could we be more blessed? I felt like God wanted us to be exactly where we were, doing exactly what we were doing. A few years later, a big career move took us to Columbus, Ohio, where I found what I thought was our dream home and a great, dynamic, progressive city. We made lots of friends, and life was good there, at least for me. But it didn't last. Within a few years, my job fell apart. I could tell Bill was unhappy. We fought more than we laughed. It was time for a change, more risk. Maybe we could move to Minneapolis, where my family lived, or Des Moines. I had great job offers, both places. Or we could take the plunge, give up the comfortable life that my corporate law career had provided us, and move back to Bill's hometown, a place where he could be happy. The biggest risk I ever took was making that decision to move back to Sioux City for Bill. We bought a big house in the Heights. Our first night there, before the moving vans came with our stuff, I built a pillow fort up in one of the bedrooms so that we could all camp out together. Bill came upstairs and said, I'm taking the kids to my sister's house for the night. And I slept alone on the floor in that big, empty house. Had I risked too much this time, Bill? We planned to flip houses and buy rental property, but I ended up having to find a job to pay the bills. I resented it. Bill didn't like my attitude. Maybe another change could fix us. A new house in Morningside, a cabin at the lake, a boat. I tried everything, but it didn't really work. Nothing seemed to help. I suggested that we make weekend excursions, just the two of us, just Bill and me. He wasn't interested. I couldn't even get him to go out for lunch. Then in 2005, a legal rights group asked us to be plaintiffs in the case to legalize same-sex marriage in Iowa. I was so excited, so honored. Bill didn't want the publicity. So we watched as other couples fought for our right and won our right to be married in Iowa. The kids, the dogs, the lake, the boat, the house, our families, kept us all together for the next 8 years. Then I decided to propose to Bill. A boat couldn't keep us together. Maybe a marriage could. I told the kids what I was planning. I called his sister, I guess in a way to get her blessing. And then on his 55th birthday, I baked his favorite chocolate chip oatmeal cake. I topped it with a mirror reflecting the rings that we'd bought years before, but no longer wore. After cooking dinner, I called the kids around the kitchen table and lit the candles for our traditional happy birthday song. I love you, Bill. I always have. I want us to be married. And I waited for those dark brown eyes to meet mine, and for that warm smile to melt my heart like it had before, for him to say the words that would make or break us. He hardly looked at me, shook his head no. And I knew Bill was gone. Over the next few years, we slowly tortured each other to the point there really wasn't anything left to do but walk away. Well, I guess for him to walk away from me. After 33 years together, my heart was still there, is still there. And 4 years later, I'm still alone. I don't want to take any risks anymore. I'm done with that. I hope he's happy. I hope he's doing well. I hope he's found all the things that he always wanted. I really do. Bill.
Jim Servan shared his story at Ode's Life Storytelling event last month. The theme was risk. Join us on Wednesdays to hear more. Next week,
Bob and I climbed out of the sandwich-plastered windows into the cold Colorado night and called the police. They called a tow truck, and we waited in silence.
Ode is a storytelling series where community members tell true stories on stage to promote positive impact through empathy. It's produced by Siouxland Public Media. Our next show is Friday, April 6th at the Marquee in downtown Sioux City. The theme is Just Keep Going, and it's inspired by this year's One Book, One Siouxland selection, Hidden Figures. Tickets are available at kwit.org. You can also listen to past stories online and learn more about Ode on Facebook. For Siouxland Public Media, I'm Ellie Carson.
He's got 500 nautical miles to forget that smile. So he's looking at the stars to get by for a while. Captain says they'll be sure by the morning light, and the sunlight will be the key to unlocking the memory that he will see. For he left his love, sat in lonely solo at the altar with promises unkept. And he never can forget. No, he never can forget. The midnight air ingrains a I broke through a boy's already beaten shame. So now he's standing there in that midnight salty air, wishing he could brush back her hair, brush back her hair. You know there's no shame in being afraid. But this man promised bravery to another name, to another name. So he'll be using nautical miles to forget those lies. A promise, noble action in good time. But that sun is now arising on that distant horizon. The pain of regret is settling in his bones. He looks towards that shore alone. But oh, he knows she's standing alone. The approaching shore in grains. A blow to a boy's already beaten shame. So now he's standing there in this midnight shorty air. He has everything to fear, everything to fear, everything to fear. What did he gain? A thought that will ruminate for the rest of his days. So he'll be using nautical miles. Forget those miles. He'll be using nautical miles to forget those lies. And he'll be using nautical miles to forget those eyes. He'll be sailing for a while, sailing for a while, sailing for a while. He'll be sailing for a while, sailing for a while, sailing for a while. Sailing for a while. Sailing for a while. Sailing for a while.